point that I would like to make is that there is some concern, particularly among the alcohol and drug treatment people, that the age 14 is not sufficient and that we ought to consider going down to age 12. The amendments that I proposed still maintain the age 14 because that was the consensus of at least the association that I'm trying to represent. But I personally became convinced that after the sessions with dialoguing with the people in the alcohol and drug abuse area, that we probably should go down to that age. But that's just my personal position. I think at that point, in view of the time, I'll stop my testimony and respond to questions.
Okay, Representative Bunn.
I have a hard time understanding for sure the magnitude of the problem and the reason there's a need for this, and part of it may be I haven't had an opportunity to review all the letters and amendments, but there are a whole series of areas where parents that I have viewed in my lifetime do things with and to their children that I don't think are beneficial in my judgment to those children, involving their physical care, their mental care. But our state has made a judgment that except for special problem areas, we're going to reserve to parents the right to raise their children, even though I disagree with the way they do that. What is occurring now that says we need to invade that situation and draw children to this kind of help without having the parent involvement?
What is happening certainly varies from county to county, but in my county, approximately 20 youngsters a year approach us who feel in dire emotional straits. Some of them are suicidal, want help, but make it very clear that there's no way they're willing to come in if they have to have their parents involved at that point. Now, my clinical experience, which hasn't been for a few years, is that in those kind of situations, if you can get access to the youngster, get them in, begin to work with them, you can work towards having the parents involved reasonably quickly. And so the issue is one of access. And my own most frequent personal experience of that has been with adolescents that were very suicidal. And that's my most imminent concern. But it also comes up very frequently with youngsters that are early into alcohol and drug abuse. And they want to come in and want to talk to somebody about that, but they're not under any circumstances willing to have their parents involved yet. So those are the situations.
Yes, Representative Bunn.
Would your amendments require that at some point prior to termination of treatment, the parents would be brought in?
The language that we would use is more of a policy directive. It is not a requirement. It's trying to state that this is the policy of the state, that parents be involved as quickly as it's clinically feasible to do that. You're not going to risk having the kid bolt off or not come in at all.
Just further comment. I support very much what you're trying to accomplish. One statement I would make, I have a very strong concern that parents be brought into the process, perhaps to the point that there be a mandatory requirement of that occurring at some point, and I just express that concern to you.
Okay, any further questions? If not, we do have your materials here, your amendments, if members haven't found them, I think you probably have it on page 6 and 7, as well as some background data. And we will review that, and Rocky, and you can feel free to be in contact if further discussion is needed in terms of clarification and interpretation of the amendments.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. Lynn Perrin.
Thank you. Ryan, and I'm a resident of Salem, and for the past 11 years, I've served as a member of the Governor's Appointed State Council on Alcohol and Drug Problems, which is the advisory body to the Alcohol and Drug Program Office of the Mental Health Division. I'm speaking today for that group, as well as for representatives of the five different community meetings that we held around the state when we were building the priorities and budget proposals for alcohol and drug programs for this year, and also for White Oaks, which is the largest and the program with the longest and most complete treatment experience in working with youth, and it's based here in Salem. Generally in the field, we recognize that there have been two major problems related to alcohol and drug treatment services for youth in Oregon. The first, of course, is the lack of affordable treatment services, and the second is the lack of access to treatment for many of those youth who are most at risk. And we addressed the issue of the affordable treatment when the field in general agreed that we would ask for conversion of 250 treatment slots in our base budget, and those slots this year and prior years have been committed to treatment of adults, and we asked to have those 250 treatment slots converted to treatment for youth because we recognize the nature and extent of the difficult time that youth are having accessing treatment in Oregon. Currently, the only kind of treatment that you can get in a residential setting is if your parents can afford the insurance costs, or if you've been adjudicated and sent to McLaren and Hillcrest and then paroled for treatment. So we don't offer a lot of treatment for a lot of seriously ill youngsters. We're talking about around 23,000 young people in Oregon who are problem drinkers, and that means that they drink once a week, probably 5 to 12 drinks. There's another category of then seriously addicted children that is about 10,000. We're really concerned about the lack of access to treatment for alcohol and drug problems. And part of that concern comes out of the fact that this is a family disease. That research shows that children who are children of alcoholics are at risk up to four times the likelihood that they will have the disease if they either begin to drink or become addicted. It's a curious paradox when children in Oregon or people in Oregon can get treatment for venereal disease at any age. And I'm not sure whether we do that out of concern that somebody might catch it or whether we're really concerned about the health of the child involved. But you can get treatment for venereal disease at any age, and you can get treatment or birth control information from a list of specified providers if you're, but because the law is silent on everything else, then therefore you cannot receive treatment for any other condition, particularly alcohol and drug abuse, and we have the recent Attorney General's opinion about that. We're concerned that not all parents can make wise choices, and I'm appreciating what Representative Bunn was saying about wanting to get parents involved in treatment. But if your parent is alcoholic, and denial is a big factor in the disease of alcoholism, if the parent is alcoholic and has no intention of going into treatment, then they're just as apt to deny that the disease is there in their children. And that's one of the biggest problems that we have. I would encourage you to take a look at the seriousness of the problem, particularly because when young people or when anyone is using alcohol or other drugs, there's a danger if it's a young woman and she becomes pregnant, if it's a young man and we know now from the research that the woman alone is not the only one who can affect the unborn child, but the risk of fetal alcohol effect, fetal alcohol syndrome, fetal cannabis effect, fetal cannabis syndrome. We have a youngster that we're treating in McLaren now who was born addicted to heroin. We have another one in McLaren that we're treating now whose birthday present for his 7th birthday was his first fix with heroin from his dad. So there are some serious problems. Not all parents can make good decisions. We're talking about probably 25% of the children in that 23,000 range. it has an impact not just on treatment programs, but on the programs in the school system that we've been trying to set up, student assistance programs to help young people who are trying to get out of the drug and alcohol involvement. But anytime you set a separate program aside like that, you're putting the child in the position of needing his parents' consent. 25% of the youngsters in Eugene who wanted to participate in the student assistance program that's sponsored by Drinking Decisions chose not to participate when they found they would have to have parental consent. 25% of the young people who have finished treatment at White Oaks in the program that works with the youth committed to McLaren and Hillcrest have no place to go when they are in recovery. Either their parents do not want them back, or their parents are still drinking and are unable to cope with the needs of the children.
Okay. Thank you for your summary of your written material, which we've received and will be made a part of the record very much, Ms. Horine. Are there any questions? I don't know if you had a chance to see the amendments, but if you have any comments on those or would like to see it, Lisette,
We're the alcohol and drug people that Dr. King worked with in the preparation.
Oh, great, great. Thank you for making that clear. Appreciate that. Ted Falk.
My name is Ted Falk. I'm an attorney. I've also proposed some amendments. I haven't seen the other amendments that have been proposed, so this may either conflict or be the same. Who knows? The thrust of my amendments is to make two points. The first point is I think some attention needs to be paid to meshing with other statutes that exist. There are federal regulations regarding disclosure of drug and alcohol information, and I don't think we want to be in a position of having a state law which requires a disclosure, which is prohibited under federal law, and then have to do some fancy footwork on that. There are also provisions in the current drug and alcohol statute about disclosure of records. More generally, as far as what the age should be, it's not quite clear what change this bill is making. The age of consent to hospital care right now is age 15. As I read the drug statute, a person of any age can can obtain drug care from an approved facility. So I think that there should be some clarification of whether this is lowering the age or simply clarifying the age, about what effect it's having by looking at the other statutes that are now on the books. So that's meshing with current law.
Ted, excuse me for interrupting. Do you have a list of what those other statutes are?
If you look at my proposed amendment, they're cited.
Okay.
And you can sort of figure it out from the way I've written it. The federal laws are in 42 CFR. My second point is a more general one, and that is whether the right to consent to treatment carries with it a right to refuse treatment. I think this is an ambiguity in the current law. I think this ambiguity is propagated and perhaps made worse by this statute. And I think that there should be a clarification about whether if a minor is of an age where the minor can consent, whether that precludes the possibility of parental consent, or whether there's a sort of dual position where both the minor and the parent can consent. And I think that should be clarified. I think the desirable direction would be to say that if a minor is above a certain age, the minor can consent, but if the minor doesn't protest, then the parent could still consent on the minor's behalf. But that isn't what you normally expect. Normally, there's only one person who can consent for medical treatment, and it's either yourself or it's some representative on your behalf. So you would normally imply from the right to consent the fact that no one else has the right to consent on your behalf. So those are the two points I wanted to make.
Okay, and you have some written language to share with us?
Yeah, I've submitted a proposed amendment, which Mr. Barilla has copies of.
Okay, great. Thank you. And I would encourage you to contact either Rocky or Bob King if you want to review their amendments and discuss. Apparently, Mr. King had to leave, but you may want to discuss your amendments with him as well
for
our next work session.
Sure.
Great. Thank you, Ted. Any questions? If not, thanks. Naomi Rice. And I do have at least one copy of your testimony, which I think has also been shared.
I have several copies.
Yes.
What? Is that correct, Chair, sir?
That's right. We've got copies distributed to all members.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, I took care of that early.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman Springer and members of the committee. For the sake of the record, I am Naomi Rice. I reside at 4014 Northeast 63rd Avenue. That address will change the 1st of April as of our plans now, but anyway. I am speaking today in support of House Bill 2056. You have been hearing a great deal today with regard to this bill about it being needed for children who are mentally, emotionally disturbed, who are suicidal, who really are at grave risk from alcohol and drug problems and mental and emotional problems. My own experience as an adolescent was that of being seriously disturbed. I was 16 years old, a good student, and experiencing a lot of intrapsychic pain. I needed and wanted in-depth psychotherapy, but I was unwilling to seek it until I was 18 years old and emancipated. My parents were supportive, and in many ways, nothing wrong with my parents. Very typical middle-class family. But because of our individual histories and relationship problems, I was unwilling to involve them in my therapy. One of the reasons why we have laws and regulations regarding therapist-client relationships is because psychotherapy, when well done, in-depth psychotherapy, penetrates personal and often socially unacceptable parts of our true selves. As a 16-year-old human being, it should have been my right, I believe, and I know this gets into the whole issue of what children's rights are, but I believe it should have been my right to embark upon that journey, that inward journey, confidentially, in order that future juveniles may have that right as human beings to embark upon that inward journey of psychotherapy, of getting to understand themselves better, of straightening out their own emotional pain and trauma. I urge you, members of the committee, to adopt House Bill 2651 with a due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rice. Let's see if there are any questions. If not, thank you again very much. Appreciate it.
I'm taking this person's notebook back to her.
Kathleen Bogan.
Representative Springer.
And Representative Peterson and Representative Bellamy. My name is Kathy Bogan. I'm the head of the Human Resources Bureau for the City of Portland. And I'm here to testify in support of the bill with the amendments, which I think you will hear from the Juvenile Rights Project. I was not aware that there were already amendments to Section 2 of the bill, which outlines basically the kinds of treatment that a youth over 14 would be able to receive without parental consent. The city's interest in this bill is this. We operate 5 youth service centers in the city of Portland, which offer many different services to youth and their families, but very often just to youth. These services are only available for children aged 10 to 18, and they are free already. In the last fiscal year, 813 kids between the ages of 10 and 18 received counseling through the city's youth service centers. Some of that was family counseling. In all of those instances,
juveniles who came in on their own were told that their parents would have to be told that they were seeking whatever they were seeking. There are drug and alcohol treatments available and referrals to drug and alcohol treatments and other kinds of clinics in the city. What I want to urge you to do is to not pass the bill in its present form, but to consider some amendments to Section 2 that would broaden the type of professional who would be able to become involved with the child. As it is now, it is only physicians, psychologists, and the community mental health clinics that receive federal money. I understand that Mr. King is proposing to broaden that somewhat, but I did hear him say something about leaving it up to administrative rule, which I suppose is one way to go. I would prefer to see something like any therapist licensed by the state of Oregon or someone who had an advanced degree, perhaps, or whatever you could agree upon. It seems to me that the 1981 legislation authorized treatment in an outpatient clinic or something along those lines. The reason is not a self-serving one. It's that kids will go where other kids go to receive treatment, where they've heard that there's a certain trust, where there's a good feeling. And I would not want to see kids forced to use certain kinds of treatment, but anything that was reputable and that was easily available to them. Mr. King said that he didn't have much experience in his county with street kids. I can tell you that we have a tremendous experience in Multnomah County with street kids, some of them from Clackamas County. I wish that someone was here from Outside In, which is the clinic in Portland that deals mainly with these kids. I also want to take the opportunity to answer Representative Bunn's question, and I'm sorry he's not here, about what has happened in society that we should interfere with this traditional and historic role between children and their parents. All the testimony so far I was interested to hear has assumed that these kids have parents, and that it would either somehow facilitate their relationship with their parents or that their parents' own problems were the cause of their immediate problem with the child. In Portland, there are thousands of children who have no relationship with any parents at all. There are something like 6,000 runaways who pass through the city of Portland in a year. We have about 600 kids who are living on the streets, who go to places like Outside In for help. Some of them are suicidal. Some of them are suicidal because they think they have AIDS or they think they have VD. I would like to see you pass as broad a statute as you are comfortable with to allow these kids access to the kind of help that they need. I also want to tell you that the two statutes that you're in search of in terms of medical care for juveniles are found at ORS 109-610 and 640, and what they authorize for children over the age of 15 are hospital care, medical or surgical diagnosis or treatment by a licensed physician. There's been a lot of confusion over what that language means, and I think you will hear from the Juvenile Rights Project that some of the impetus for this bill this year is that people often call who are professionals in this field and say, can I treat this kid? I don't understand what the law means. And I think the purpose of this is very much to make the law clear whether psychological counseling is a medical treatment or not. I think it's arguable whether, when not provided by a licensed physician, it is indeed a medical treatment that falls within that statute. I also am an attorney, so that's my attorney opinion.
Okay, Representative Peterson.
Thank you. Are you comfortable with the age 14 in here, or would you prefer to see that lowered?
Again, I wish that I had time. The bill in 81 was 12. I realize that. I think the problems have probably gotten worse rather than better since 81. I wish I had time to check to see what age group we were providing counseling to in the youth service centers. We do go as low as 10. I don't know how the curve would fall. And I would defer to professionals on that.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bellamy.
Kathy, rather than using the term a licensed psychiatrist, would it be better to say with the approval of the mental health director? Of a local county mental health director.
To approve the programs?
Mm-hmm. That a child could be receiving without the consent of the parents.
I'd rather see you make that decision. If you did it, if you left it up to the discretion of the county mental health director, I suspect that from county to county it would be a different kind of standard. What I was proposing was language, not licensed psychiatrist, but a therapist licensed by the state, which would be, in many cases, people with MSWs and things like that. I would not want you to leave it up to a county-by-county decision.
How come? I guess.
I think it may not be consistent. Some counties may set the standard higher than other, and then what would you have kids doing, form shopping for the county where they could, I'd rather see you say, here's a standard that we feel comfortable with. If someone has a license or someone has an advanced degree, then we think that it would be okay. I'd also look at the language in 81 and see what was passed then. I only read the summary.
I guess, Mr. Chairman,
the
concern that I have when we use a licensed therapist, then you always get into the technical difficulty of license. And I guess you're in Multnomah County. You know of somebody that is taking advantage of children. They may be fully licensed and everything else. I guess I would say that even though they would be setting different standards, the local mental health director probably could have a better access as to whether or not the child is getting therapy and treatment that is in the best interest of children under the age of 18, or whether or not there is the potential that this treatment is something that they're being taken advantage of. We can't do that legislatively, even when we use the term licensed therapist, as you know.
Right.
That's why I would like to have your comments on it.
I still would rather have the standards set uniformly at the state level. I know that there's some concern about steering kids away from people who would abuse them, and my answer to that is professionals have if there is a physical abuse kind of situation, a child abuse situation, sexual or other physical abuse, that there's a responsibility on the part of therapists to report that, regardless of whether the person is licensed or not licensed, or regardless of whether it rises to the attention of the community mental health director, that anyone aware of that abuse would have a responsibility to report it. I agree with you, the license doesn't necessarily guarantee that everything will be perfect. I think there are people who would do a very good job of counseling kids who perhaps are not licensed by the state. And I think it's deciding where to draw that line. I just, rather than suggesting where to draw it, I wanted to say I think it's right now drawn too high. In this statute, you're basically, this bill as drafted simply set up a market for physicians and psychologists and the community mental health centers, and I think you want probably to reach as many kids as you can, and that means including other kinds of clinics.
If we take away the right of the parent to know, which is a tough thing to do, the natural thing for the parent to come back and say is, what standard do we have to guarantee that my child is getting at least, an adequate or a responsible bit of therapy?
That's why I'm suggesting that if you're making a decision as a state body, you could fall back on another state body and say, we're requiring these people to be licensed by the state. I think that the youth service centers would be comfortable with that. I don't know how that would affect other clinics. I think you should hear from other kinds of clinics. There's a state standard for doing that.
There's some counselors in this field that are not licensed, isn't that correct? Because we have a bill.
Yes,
I know school counselors, and I'm not so sure that family counselors or something that are not licensed because they've introduced a bill for the last couple of sessions. So that's another concern. There's a group of people out there that do not have a state licensure procedure.
There are people in the room, I'm sure, who could explain better than I can about the different levels. I'm asking you to just pick one that's lower so that more kids will be able to walk into places where they feel comfortable to get this kind of treatment, because I think it's it definitely needs to be done. You already said in 1981 it definitely needed to be done, and in Portland at least things have only gotten worse. So I'd like to see you say it again, and the governor not to veto it this time.
Any further questions? If not, thank you, Ms. Bogan.
Thank you.
And you want to submit anything to us in writing in terms of additional comments or suggested amendments, we'll be glad to receive those. Thank you. Okay, John McKelly. You want to rain on this parade, right? No. Okay.
My name is John McKelly, representing the Oregon Psychiatric Association. The association, at their last legislative committee meeting, did take a stand in opposition to the bill as it was written for fear that we would be establishing a state policy here which they felt was not clinically sound, and that is not involving family members in the treatment process, and they felt that that was clinically not a good idea. I have just had a chance to review the amendments that Dr. King presented to the committee, and before adamantly espousing that position of opposition, would like to take these back to the psychiatrist and have them look at that, because I think he does address some of those concerns in his amendments.
Appreciate that, John. Any questions at this point? I don't know your time frame, but it's possible work session could be scheduled within a couple weeks, so if you can let us know within that period of time.
Mr. Chair, we have a meeting tomorrow night.
Okay. Good timing. Thanks. Anything else?